بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي ليس لأوليته ابتداء ولا لأزليته انقضاء، وانحسرت الأوصاف عن كنه معرفته وردعت عظمته العقول، والذي لا تواري عنه سماء سماء ولا أرض أرضا. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على سيد الفتحاء سيد المرسلين والأنبياء أبي القاسم محمد المصطفى، وعلى الجوهرة القدسية البتول العذراء سيدة النساء فاطمة الزهراء، وعلى بعلها أمير المؤمنين وبنيها الذين أصحب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا. لا سيما على بقية الله وحجته الكبرى الذي بيمنه رزق الورى، وبوجوده ثبتت الأرض والسماء، ولولاه لساخت الأرض بأهلها، واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين من حين عداوتهم إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى في كتابه الكريم: قل هل يستوي الأعمى والبصير أفلا تتفكرون. We were discussing about the concept of justice, adl, in our belief system, and the fact that our Isna Ashari belief, our 12er imami belief, is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is adil, and he performs the things which are aqlan and intellectually considered to be hasan and good, and he never performs anything which is aqlan and intellectually considered to be qabih or condemned attributes, things which our intellect appreciates and considered to be good are performed by Allah, and things which our aql and intellect condemns are never done by Allah. So we understand that there are certain things which the human intellect can understand about the fact that they are good or they are bad. Those things are good or they are bad. Since our aql has been given the power by Allah himself to understand the good and bad about certain things, that is why aql and intellect has been made a criteria to judge within its own limits. So we understand that the aql is able to judge, but there are certain limits, of course. But within the limits of, within the jurisdiction of aqls and intellects understanding, it has been made a criteria to judge. Farther than the limits, aql has to resort to wahi and revelation because there are so many things which occult and human intellect is unable to understand. That is precisely one of the reasons why we have to resort to wahi and revelation. But within, we are talking about within the limits of intellect, within the limits of the understanding of intellect and akal, where we have been, the akal has been given the power to judge and understand about certain things. We are talking about that, those limits only. The actions are classified into two. I told you the three different meanings of Hasan and Qabih, the good and the bad, the good and the evil, the good and the condemned actions. Three different meanings we already discussed in the previous lesson. And the difference which is there between the Isna Ashari, 12er Imami Islam, with the Asha'ira is about the third meaning of the word Hasan, what is considered to be good actions, and Qabih, those which are considered to be bad actions or condemned actions. So there were three meanings that I told you for the words Hasan and Qabih, good and bad, good and condemned actions. The first meaning was a sifatul kamal. Hasan is something which is sifatul kamal. Hasan is something which is aqlan, intellectually considered to be a good attribute, an attribute of perfection for a human. Like, I give you the example of ilm, knowledge. Aql considers that, acquiring more knowledge is an attribute, is a good attribute. It's an appreciated attribute. It's an attribute of kamal and perfection. Whereas qabih, the bad action, the first meaning of these two words, the bad action was classified as a sifatun naqs, an attribute of naqs, of shortfall in ourselves, like jahl and ignorance. That was the first meaning for these two words, hasan and qabih, good and bad. The second meaning for this, for these words, hasan and qabih, good and bad actions. The first meaning, I already told you. The second meaning was something which is muwafiqut tab' is called hasan, and something which is mukhalifut tab' is called qabih. Anything which is harmonious to your nature, in sync with your nature, in aligned with your nature, human nature, is called hasan, a good action. Like all the pleasures, and anything which is not harmonious to the human nature, anything which is not in sync or in line with the human nature, which is mukhalif of the human taba and nature, is called qabih, a bad action, a bad thing. And the example being the pains, all the pains and sorrows, the pains in this world. That is the second meaning, how it is defined. We don't have any difference with any sect about these two classifications of the good and bad actions, these two meanings of the word Hasan and Qabih, good and bad deeds. So the conflict between the 12er Isna Ashari, 12er Imami with Asha'ira is about the third meaning, third classification of the good and bad deeds, Hasan and Qabih, good and bad deeds, the appreciated or the condemned deeds. What's the third meaning? And in that, the Mu'tazila are on our side. They believe in the same what we believe, and Asha'ira are standing on the other side. The third meaning for these two words, Hasan and Qabih, the good and bad actions, the appreciated and the condemned, the good or bad. The third meaning is that a hasan action, a good action, a good deed is something the doer is praised upon in this life, in this world, and he becomes deserving of reward in the hereafter, in the akhirat. So that's the third meaning of the word hasad, where Asha'ira do differ with us. They do not accept this meaning. They do not accept that akal is able, intellect is able to understand the goodness of the deeds in this meaning of the word. So this third meaning says that any hasan is defined, a good action, a good deed is defined as something that the doer of that deed is praised upon in this world and becomes deserving and mustahak of reward and sawab in the hereafter, in the akhirat. That kind of deed, that kind of action is called hasan, a good deed, a good action. Whereas the qabih, the condemned action, the bad action, the evil action, is defined as the action upon which the doer is condemned in this world and he becomes deserving of azab and punishment in the hereafter. The doer has mazammat, has condemnation and punishment, condemnation in this dunya, in this world, and punishment in the hereafter, azab in the akhirat. So that was the third meaning of the word hasan and qabih, the good and bad deeds. And we must understand these three meanings so that we can realize exactly where the controversy is. The controversy is in the third meaning of good and bad deeds. Third meaning of the hasan and qabih, the good and bad deeds. So that is where we, the 12er imamis, believe that yes, the human intellect can understand about certain things, the fact that this thing is hasan, in this meaning like I explained the third one, the human intellect can understand that about certain actions that it is good or it is bad, in this third meaning of the word good and bad, hasan and qabih. We can understand through our intellect. We can understand that certain actions are need to be appreciated. The doer is mustahak of madh. The doer needs to be appreciated, and the doer becomes deserving of reward in the day of judgment, in the hereafter. And likewise, the human intellect can understand about certain actions which are qabih, which are condemned, which are bad, certain actions which are qabih, the human intellect can understand about those certain actions that they are bad. So that is why the human intellect considers the doer of those actions to be deserving of condemnation in this world and deserving of punishment in the hereafter. So since the human intellect can understand the doer needs to be appreciated or condemned in this world, if he performs good or bad deeds, and the doer deserves to be rewarded or punished in the hereafter, if he performs those hasan, those good or bad deeds, since the akal is able to understand this much, that is why akal is the criteria to understand the goodness or the badness of certain things, the good or bad of the certain things. So we understand these three meanings of the good and bad deeds, which I would like wanted to to make you recall about the previous lesson. And today, as we continue on the same, let me define something so that things become further clear to all of you. Actions in general are classified to be in two categories. Please pay attention. Actions in general are classified into two. The first, unintentional, al-af'al al-la-shu'uriya, la-shu'uri kaam. کارهایی که انسان از شعور و ادراک انجام نمیدهد. Unintentional deeds, الافعال اللاشعوریه. Like unintentional deeds, like a movement of a person who is sleeping, or a movement or actions of a person who forgetfully performs something. So that was not never intended. These are classified to be unintentional actions. And the second category, you know, certain people, they move around and they're sleeping, or they're certain times they move their different parts of the body during sleeping, hands, for example, feet. So these are actions, these are deeds, but they are unintentional. So they are la shu'uri, they are unintentional. The other category of the actions are shu'uri. That means those af'al, those deeds, which are done out of intention, knowingly and intentionally done. So those actions are the ones which actually are related to our discussion, not the first one. We are not talking about the la shu'uri actions, the unintended actions. We are talking about the intended actions. And among the intended actions, that means the shu'uri actions, al-af'al al-shu'uriya, those actions, those deeds which are done intentionally, those which are intended, they are again classified into two. The first, where akal could not find its way to understand, and the second, where akal can find its way to understand. So the intended actions, the intended deeds, al-af'al al-shu'uriya, af'al al-shu'uri, the intended deeds are classified into two. The first, where akal cannot find its way, cannot understand about those actions, whether they are good or they are bad, whether they are hasan, good, or they are bad, qabih, akal cannot understand, akal cannot find its way to understand. And the second category of the intended deeds is where akal can find its way to understand. The first, where akal cannot find its way, are classified into those al-ahkam al-taklifiyya, those five basic Islamic rulings that we say all the ahkam in Islam are classified into five. You must have heard or studied already, you know, ahkam al-taklifiyya are five. That means it's either wajib or haram or mustahab or makruh or mubah. So those, all those ahkam al-taklifiyya, five basic ahkam and rulings of Islam, are classified into the first. That means where akal cannot find its way. That means those intended actions where akal is unable to understand what is good and what is bad about it. So all the five ahkam al-taklifiyya, all the five basic Islamic rulings are related to this category. That means where akal, they are intended actions, but akal is unable to understand. And the second, where akal is able to understand and the action is intended, and akal is able to understand, intellect is able to understand, is called the qabih or the hasan. And this is where our discussion is all about. So, we understand up till now that anything which akal considered to be good is good, and anything that akal and intellect considered to be bad and condemned and qabih is fi nafsihi, in itself it is qabih. And anything which akal considered to be hasan and good is fi nafsihi hasan, in itself it is good, it needs to be considered to be good, it needs to be appreciated, and it deserves a reward on the day of judgment, and the doer deserves to be appreciated in this world. And anything that akal considered to be qabih and bad is fi nafsihi qabih, in itself it is considered to be qabih, and the doer needs to be condemned in this world and will be punished in the hereafter, in the akhirat. So the sharia, what the sharia does is that about these things which akal is able to understand the good and bad about it, what the sharia does about these things is that sharia performs the taqeed. It emphasizes and stresses on what akal and intellect has already informed us. What the sharia does is that after the sharia arrived, it actually emphasized and did the taqeed and stressed on the same point. Otherwise, for those things, the akal was able to understand. Sharia is only a mu'akkid. Islamic sharia and code of law is just, it emphasizes and stresses on what the akal has already told us. That's the beauty of the creation of God. See, Allah has provided us intellect and given us a criteria to understand and judge already. And then we encounter the sharia. Akal is is an inbuilt quality and power in our soul, which is provided to every human by birth, and he has the criteria given by God himself. God himself has made such an arrangement for us that he has provided an inbuilt criteria in ourselves, in every human. And then when we, as we grow up and we encounter the prophets and the imams and the messengers and the books and the code of law provided by the messengers and propagated by and defended by the imams, we encounter the sharia, the code of law. We find the sharia is stressing and emphasizing on the same things what our human intellect is giving the judgment about. So this is how we can judge that, and we can find that akal and sharia both are compatible. Both are, that's how we can certify the sharia. That's how we can verify it. That's how we can bring iman and faith in the sharia, because our akal is, the criteria is still there, is already there to verify it. Remember, like I told you in the beginning of our lesson, that we are talking about only those rulings which akal is able to understand. Yet right now the whole discussion is revolving around those things only which is within the jurisdiction of human intellect. We are not talking about those things which the human intellect is unable to understand, and those things which are beyond the limits of understanding of human intellect. We are not talking about them. Certainly there are a lot of things which the human intellect cannot understand, and that is precisely why we do require the prophets and imams, the messengers and the revelation to come and guide us. So we are talking about those things which the human akal in itself, by itself, is able to understand. About those things we already have been given the akal to understand, and God has given us that criteria. So when the sharia arrives and talks about the same things which our intellect has already guided us towards, sharia talks about the same things, our akal is already there to verify it easily and understand. And akal is the criteria. And even about those things that our akal by itself, on its own, is unable to understand, even about those things which we require the wahi and revelation to come and inform us, even still, akal is beneficial in the sense that it is utilized to understand and verify the wahi, because akal realizes that these are things which are beyond our imagination, beyond our understanding, beyond our reach, and beyond our limits. So akal realizes that it is beyond our limits. So we need to surrender to what God has said, because it is beyond our reach. So we cannot understand if we do not surrender ourselves to the revelation. So even in those areas, akal is utilized and used to certify the teachings of the wahi and revelation. So it's not, so akal is always instrumental. Akal is always something which helps. So it's very important why we are emphasizing the role of human intellect about the justice of God, because before we talk about that anything and everything that God has done and God does and performs is according to what the human intellect says, because that's how you can verify what God has done is correct. See, that's the beauty of God's creation. He has first given us the criteria, and then He has, left up to us to judge and certify and bring iman and faith in His teachings. If we didn't have the criteria beforehand given already to us, how would we certify? So, akal and intellect understands the good and bad, hasan and qabih. What is hasan and what is qabih? What is good and what is bad? The good and bad of certain things, and that much akal can even understand before encountering the sharia. So let me give you certain examples. Akal can understand that adl is hasan and zulm is qabih. Intellect can understand that justice is a good attribute, is something which deserves praise in this world. Anybody performing adl and justice deserves praise in this world, and this deserves to be, if a human performs justice in his life, he deserves to be praised in this world and he deserves to be rewarded. And akal and intellect is able to understand that if anybody performs injustice, deserves to be condemned in this world, and there has to be a place where he needs to be punished. Akal can understand that sidq, truthfulness, is hasan, is something which is nafi', is something which is beneficial. Saying the truth, always telling the truth, is something which is good, something which is beneficial, and something which needs to be praised. And akal can, and human intellect can understand that kizb, telling a lie, is muzir, is harmful. A liar needs to be condemned. It doesn't deserve a praise. And lying is harmful. Akal can understand. Human intellect can understand that much. Likewise, the human intellect and akal can understand that amanatdari, taking care of your entrusted things which are entrusted to you, all the trusts which are entrusted to you, and you are made a trustee for that. The things that are entrusted to you, and you are the ameen of those things, you must exercise amanat. You must be ameen about all those things, and do not breach your trust. And so akal understand that amanat is something which needs to be appreciated, and somebody who takes care of the amanat, he takes care of the entrusted things which are entrusted to him, needs to be there has to be a place where this kind of person is rewarded. And akal likewise can understand that khiyanat is a condemned thing, it's qabih. Amanat is hasan, is good. And khiyanat is qabih. Amanat is something which deserves a praise in this world. And there has to be a place where person who exercises amanat, amanat dari, needs to be rewarded. And akal can understand that khiyanat, breaching your trusts, is something which deserves to be condemned. The doer deserves to be condemned, and there has to be a place where he receives his punishment. Likewise, the akal can understand that shuja'at, being brave, is a good attribute, and it deserves a praise. It helps. And jubn, that means buzdili, being coward, timidity, and cowardness is not something which deserves to be praised. It's not a praiseworthy thing. It's a condemned thing. Likewise, akal can understand that sakhawat, being generous, generosity, is beneficial. It has a benefit, and it needs to be praised. Somebody who is generous, he needs to be praised. And it is something which is hasan, something which deserves the praise in this world, and there has to be a place where a generous person should be rewarded for what he has done. And somebody who is bakhil, and bukhl is qabih, being a miser, is a condemned attribute. And it's not helpful, it's harmful to be a miser, harmful for the human society at large. So, these are a few examples, and if you want to generalize all what we have said about these examples, we can put it in two words, that everything which is in sync with adl and justice, akal appreciates that. See, if we were talking about the sakhawat and generosity of somebody, well, he has money more than his needs, so he can give it to others. So it's in sync with that adl and justice concept to give the money which is more than your necessities of life to those who deserve it. It's in sync with the concept of adl and justice. If somebody has shuja'at, he has bravery, he is a brave person, so he can help others in the time of need. Adl and justice says that he should help. It's just to help others when you can help. So adl says and justice says that you should always tell the truth. Remember the meaning of justice that we discussed in the beginning, the literal meaning of the word, the putting everything on its own place. So when you say the truth, you are putting everything on its own place. When you're when you're telling a lie, you're not putting the thing on its place where it deserves to be put. So it's all these things actually get back to two fundamental points. Adl is hasan and zulm is qabih. Justice is good and needs to be appreciated in this world, and there has to be a place where a person who exercises justice, who is just, he needs to be rewarded, and that is the hereafter. And zulm, injustice and cruelty is condemned. Akal says that, intellect says that injustice needs to be condemned, and it's condemned here in this world, and there has to be a place, the hereafter, the akhirat, there has to be some place where doers of injustice need to be condemned and punished for what they have done. So everything gets back to the husn of adl, adl being a good thing, adl being hasan, adl being an appreciated thing, and zulm being qabih, injustice being a condemned thing. Everything gets back to these two fundamental points. And so to summarize our discussion for today, I would say that we must remember three basic evidences. The first, we can the first evidence is that all the deeds which are classified into hasan and kabih, good and condemned, good and bad, can be easily understood by every intellect, and this is self-evident. It's badihi that the human intellect understands about the goodness and bad of deeds. The second thing and evidence is that even those people who are against the Sharia, even those people who are mulhid, even those people who have nothing to do with God, even those people who are agnostics, even those people who are totally disoriented and totally a disbeliever in God, those which are classified as mulhid, even those people are able to understand about certain things, like I gave you so many examples, and then we summarize into adl and zulm. Even those people who are totally ignorant of God and disagree with God and disbelieve in God and totally, they have no connection, no relation with the belief in God in any form. Even those people are able to understand that justice is good and justice needs to be appreciated. And zulm and cruelty and injustice need to be condemned, which is an evidence, which is a very, very strong evidence that hasan and qabih of the deeds is understandable by human aql. Because those people are disoriented with the Sharia. They have nothing to do with the Sharia. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in none of the messengers, none of the books. So when even they are able to judge that certain things are good and certain things are bad, then even they are able to judge that justice needs to be appreciated from whomsoever it may be. It needs to be appreciated. And injustice and cruelty needs to be condemned from whomsoever it may occur. When even the mulhid people, even the agnostics, even the total disbelievers are able to give those kinds of judgments about justice and injustice. So we understand that the human aql is able to understand the good and bad about the deeds. Even if you don't resort to the Sharia, you can understand, because these people don't believe in Sharia, but they still understand. Which is a second evidence about the fact that aql and intellect on its own is able to judge the good and bad of certain deeds. And the third evidence that we have, the first, that the hasan and qabih, the good and bad of the deeds, are badihi. Every intellectual person on its own can realize. Second of all, and it's self-evident, you don't need to install an evidence for that, it's self-evident. It's so much obvious. And the second evidence, that even the disbelievers and mulhid people who are totally disbelievers in God, totally disbelieving in God, then they can also realize and judge about the good and bad. That's the second evidence, that judging the hasan and qabih, the good and bad of things, does not depend on the Sharia. We can understand it with the aql. And the third evidence is that the hasan and qabih of the things can be understood by aql. That means our 12er Isna Ashari sect believes in the Husna Qubh Akli, that Al Hasanu Ma Hassanahu Al Aql, Wal Qabihu Ma Qabbahahu Al Aql. And so Husn and Qubh, Hasan and Qabih, good and bad of the deeds is understandable by the Aql. The third evidence is that if we do not believe that the Hasan and Qabih, the deeds being good and bad, can be understood by the human intellect, if you do not agree with that, if you do not believe in that, then you will be forced to say that even the good and that even the goodness and the bad of according to the Sharia is also unacceptable. Even what the Sharia tells us, this is good and this is bad, will also be unacceptable. Why? Because when the Sharia will come up and tell us, hey, this is good, believe in this, and this is bad, and do not believe in this, do not perform this, when the Sharia will come up and tell us, you will be unable to understand, unable to accept that. And this is the evidence that we need to accept, that that good and bad should be accepted and is accepted by the akal and intellect. Even when the Sharia will come up and tell us this is good and bad, we will be unable to believe in that. Why? Because it is through the power of akal and intellect that we are going to verify the Sharia tomorrow. If we are unable to use our intellect to judge good and bad, we will be unable to verify what the Sharia tomorrow will tell us, this is good and this is bad. It's through the intellect that we will verify the Sharia. Because it's through our intellect that we verify the messengers. Because it's through our intellect that we verify the revelation. Because it's through our intellect that we verify that is compulsory on it's compulsory from Allah to provide the prophets to guide us for our guidance. It's through our akal and intellect that we believe in the tawheed and oneness concept of God. So everything gets back to our intellect, which has been given by God Himself as a criteria. So by using the power of akal, we judge that God is one. By using the power of akal and intellect, we judge that it's incumbent and compulsory on God to send, the messengers should arrive from His behalf for our guidance. It's by our intellect and akal we understand that it's an incumbent to provide a code of Sharia, a code of law for the humankind's guidance. It's through our intellect that we judge that the Sharia, when it says that this is good, it has to be good. Because, and if the Sharia says it's bad, it has to be bad. Because when we accept God to be someone who we, it's incumbent on God to provide guidance to us, and something which is condemned can never be done by God. So when He sends the Sharia, it is telling us something which is in our benefit. So we have to verify to our intellect, something which is beyond our limits of understanding, and it's beneficial for our success and instrumental for our success. So all this which is told by the Sharia has to be judged and verified through the human intellect. And if that criteria was not provided to us, there was no way whatsoever for a person to judge the Tawheed of Allah, the oneness concept of God, and the Haqqaniyat of the Nubuwwat of any prophet. There was no way for the human intellect to judge that the prophethood of any prophet is true and correct. It is through the criteria of intellect that we judge all that. And the entire Sharia is resting on the haqqaniyat of nubuwwat. The entire Sharia is resting on the fact that the prophethood of all the prophets is true. That's why we accept the Sharia. And prophets tell nothing but what is true. Because it's unjust for the prophets to tell something which is lie. Because it is unjust for God to send a prophet which is a liar as a prophet. Na'udhu billah. Because it is unjust for God to oblige us to do something which is a lie, which is harmful. So He is always going to guide us towards what is good and what is adl and justice. How can we judge all that? Through the intellect. So we need to understand in the beginning, the akal can understand, intellect can understand what is good and what is bad. And then we would be able and empowered to judge that all what the Sharia has told us, all what the Prophet has informed us, all what God has guided us towards, all those things are beneficial for us. And the good things of the Sharia, things which Sharia has obliged us to do, are good. Things that the Sharia has recommended us to do, made mustahab for us, are good, needs to be appreciated and done and performed. And things which Sharia has stopped us from doing, harams, are things which are, if we perform, we need to be condemned on that. It's through akal that we understand. And things which Sharia has made us, obliged us not to do, or it's better not to do, they deserve condemnation to a higher or the lower level. Higher level for the haram things, lower level for the makruh things. So it's all the goods and bads of the Sharia, you know, the actions that Sharia considers to be good and bad are will be verified through the power of akal. We will utilize the akal to verify the teachings of the Sharia. Even those teachings which are out of our reach of understanding, we will utilize the akal to verify the prophets, verify the revelations, and verify the fact that all what they will tell is nothing but good. Even though we may not understand it, but it has to be nothing but good. And all what they are stopping us from doing has to be nothing but bad. Even though we may not understand that, but it has to be nothing but it has to be bad. That's why they are stopping us. So it's through the akal that we would understand that. So we got to understand the criteria for judging is akal in the beginning. Otherwise, the Sharia and its teachings will also lose their weight, and no human will be able to judge the truthfulness of the Sharia. No human will be able to judge the truthfulness of the prophets and the messengers and the revelation, and no human will be able to judge the Tawheed without the akal. And you can never inspire any human being to bring faith in Tawheed, in oneness of God. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Assalamu alaikum. If anybody has any questions, please either raise your hand and take the mic and ask the question. And if you're having difficulty, just type the question and inshallah I'll read it. Okay, well, I'll start while you're thinking about your questions. Maulana, you said about the necessities of life. So if you have more than the necessities of life, then you should be giving that away. But what is the scale to be used for determining what and how much is needed? In other words, everybody uses a different criteria for saying what they need. So if you don't believe in Islam and in faith and all that, how does one understand that this is more than what you need? Even within Islam, people have different criteria they use that this is their need.
Yes, the criteria to understand what are the limits of our need. I think Islamically, every human himself has to be the judge for himself. We all know what we need in our life. Yes, I agree. There may be different behaviors coming up from different people. But those behaviors arise out of ignorance. The Islamic criteria, if it is understood, the Islamic ruling that we are told, if we understand that, I think the differences will disappear if everybody acts upon those teachings correctly. Islamically speaking, everybody is allowed to spend anything First of all, making money from halal is not a problem. You can make millions and billions and billions of dollars from halal. There's no restriction in Islam whatsoever. There's no restriction whatsoever about making money from halal. Restrictions are on spending the money. So we find that Imam Sadiq al-Islam had said about Imam Ali that أَعْتَقَ أَلْفَ مَمْلُوكٍ مِنْ كَبْدِ يَدِهِ. Imam Ali had set free 1,000 slaves from his income, from his earnings, in other words. So setting 1,000 slaves free from his income, how much was the cost of a slave? A slave wasn't one dirham or one dinar. Of course, maybe hundreds of or thousands of dirhams. Maybe hundreds, maybe thousands. So he set free 1,000 slaves, so you can add up how much money he'd made. So there's no problem in Islam about making money from halal. Problem is spending the money. Imam Ali spent the money on his basic necessities of life only. So this is what is the teaching of Islam, that everybody is supposed to spend his money according to his social status, keeping in view his social status, within the limits of his social status, on all his necessities of life. There's no problem about that. Yet the moment I step farther than my social status, again, you may say, or anybody may say, it's hard to judge of a status. And I would again reply, if I'm asked, that judging the social status of a person, again, he himself is the best judge. He himself has to be the judge for that. The status which the society considers, the uqala, urf of uqala, the aqil people, the religiously intellectual people of the society, how do they consider your status? And that we should be able to judge about ourselves. Otherwise, we have to turn to the religiously intellectual people to judge about ourselves, and they can judge and tell you. So by looking at your background, your status, your qualification, your family, your income, everything, they will look at your portfolio and they can tell about your status. So given the fact, after judging your status, within the limits of your status, you are allowed to spend your money on all what you need. You need a car? Fine, buy a car. You need 10 cars, you can buy 10 cars if you need them, within the limits of your status. You need anything in your life that you need for yourself, you are free to buy in Islam. But yes, stepping out of our limits of our social status is not allowed in Islam. Or spending money on the things that we do not need, spending money on things that we do not need for our life, is not okay in Islam. And that has to be checked. And if everybody in the society keeps a watch and keeps an eye on his social status and spends his money on what he needs for his life, living a respectable life in the community, which Allah doesn't want us to be humiliated before the people, He allows us to live a respectable life within in the community. So if we spend money within our social status limits on all the necessities of our life, the rest of the money which remains has to be spent for the sake of the good causes, the noble causes, for the sake of God. And it's God's money. Islamic vision and perspective is that every money and every ni'mat belongs to Allah, and it's an amanat and trust in our hands. And that's the test of our faith and iman. How do we behave with the entrusted things that are entrusted to us? So money is one of those entrusted things. So how do we behave with this blessing of God? It's not ours. Yes, we earned it, but God gave it to us. It's a trust and amanat from God in our hands. And this is our test. How do we behave? We are allowed to spend it within the limits of our social status and all the needs and everything else. It already belonged to God. He allowed us to do our necessities. All the rest still belongs to Him, and it has to go back to Him.
Okay, Maulana, I have one other question, and if nobody else has any question, then we'll close this session with thank you to you. The question I have is, again, that when we talk about adl, justice and injustice concept, it exists in human beings to a different level. So if you're not a follower of Islam, your concept of adl or justice is completely different. So when you put it in perspective of outside the religion but just your intellect, how does one resolve that? That, for example, Christians supposedly believe that you turn the other cheek regardless of whether or not it was injustice. While my understanding is that Islam says you have the right within the Islamic laws for what is rightfully yours. You don't turn the other cheek, so to speak. So how do you resolve that when you take it outside the context of Islamic laws, but just based on adl? If you have never been taught those values, then how does a human being understand that, what are the limits that you should be living by?
yes, Islamically, we strongly believe that it's you know, it's a false allegation and against Prophet Jesus. Prophet Jesus never did such a thing, and it's impossible for any of the prophets to do something which is classified as injustice and classified as giving in to the injustice of somebody. Because if you give in yourself and let others do injustice on you, you are part of the injustice. You are part of it. So you are part of the crime. A prophet is infallible. He can never do that. That's a false. That's a lie. And it's something which is classified to be, a tuhmat. And it's incorrect, totally incorrect. And yes, there are people who believe in that. But again, if the people see, there are so many things that people believe in different religions which do not make sense. There are so many things, and this is one of those things which we find that does not make sense to the pure human intellect. Because ask a human, is it okay to slap a person? What would he respond? Ask a Christian, is it okay to slap a person? What if I slap you? Is it okay? Certainly he's not going to agree with that. Okay, when it's not okay, it's something which is condemned. So when it's something it's condemned, okay, then you got to condemn the person who is slapping. Now, okay, coming to the point, is it okay to accept the injustice done? Again, it's unacceptable to the human intellect. Now, if somebody's even believing in such a belief is also incorrect, because we cannot accuse an infallible prophet doing such a thing which is injustice. And we at Islam, we respect Prophet Jesus, and we consider him to be infallible, and he never performs any injustice, and he has never given in to any kind of injustice. And this is insultive of the prophet to be slapped by somebody and he stays idle, and this is also injustice. So there are a lot of things which some people believe in their faiths which do not make sense. Yes, I agree. But if you analyze, and if they start analyzing, if they start thinking, if they start using their intellect, they also will realize that it does not make sense, and they will realize that it's against the intellect. That's how we have to awaken their intellect to realize. You know what Imam Ali has said in Nahdul Balagha, talking about, you know, the prophets that لَيُثِيرُ لَهُمْ دَفَائِنَ الْأُقُولِ. You know, so we understand in the light of this statement in Nahdul Balagha that the job of the prophets was to bring up the dafa'in, the buried things of the intellect. What's the meaning is that the aql, gives judgments about the things, the power of the akal was buried by the people under their desires, and the job of the prophets is to come up and bring the buried akal, which is buried under the pile of desires, bring that buried akal from inside and bring it back to the top. That is the job of the prophets, to bring the buried akal, which is buried under the stack and pile of desires and wishes of the humans, bring it back on top, so that the akal is in the ruling status, and then the akal is in the guiding platform, and the rest of the things come under it and are overwhelmed by akal. So that's the job. We need to empower their akal. We need akal of the people. We need to purify or refine the akal and keep it away from their desires. And there were a lot of people who believe in a lot of things. I mean, believing in idols doesn't add up with the human intellect. You know, a lot of people believed in the idols, I agree with your example, but that's the job of the prophets, and that's the job of all the people who are knowledgeable and scholars, to go and preach and tell the truth, so that they utilize the akal in the proper way to judge that some of their beliefs are incorrect. And if they refine the power of their akal, they think, they ponder, they will, even with their own intellect, they will realize that that this belief is incorrect. And that's how some of the people get guided, because the power of akal was there. It was just the matter how to refine it. The moment it clicks in their mind, they start thinking, well, yeah, what we were believing was incorrect.